gentlemen, the whole history of art consists of the history of the gradual development of realism, fighting against various anti-realistic movements, including medieval mysticism and reactionary romanticism. And especially nice example is given by the historical development of Slovak music, in which a specific historical situation, the long-lasting and national and social oppression of Slovaks by Hungarian feudalists, constituted a particularly appropriate framework for the crystallization of the opposites of two cultures that Lenin spoke about. I have opened my contribution with a quotation from Zdenko Novacek's book on contemporary Slovak music from 1955, in which this industrious leader of Štanov explicated his impressions and opinions on recent compositions by Slovak composers. The young Czech musicologist, who had come to Slovakia in 1949, became an influential man, the director of the conservatory and a member of the Prague parliament. Today he may be a laughingstock for us, as he looks a bit like a character from Shostakovich's anti-formalist Chichesky Rayok. However, in his time it wasn't fun at all. In all countries of the Soviet zone, erudite composers and musicologists watched the rise of such so-called scholars with horror, for these scholars did not let themselves be hampered by any knowledge of the given issue, but followed instead the example of the linguist Stalin. My subject is Slovakness in music. What stands in the foreground in Novacek's quoted book is not the demand for a Slovak character of Slovak music, but the demand for the international concept of socialist realism. Novacek uses the term national realism for the preceding stage of development of Slovak music, in which Slovak composers were not experienced in the issue of class fight yet. The resulting utopia is outlined by him in a laudatory passage about Zicker's cantata Salutation to Stalin. It is the connection of, quote, traditional Slovak folk music intonations with traits typical of the new songs of the builders of socialism and of the life per se, end quote. According to the testimony of Zicker's wife, Novacek personally forced him to write a piece, threatening that, quote, otherwise we will attack you politically. However, another ideological concept prevailed in the post-war Slovak music. No proletarian musicians triumphed, but cultivated and restrained modernists. We call them modernists in the Slovak musicological literature. Whether they are really modernists is another question. The generation of Eugen Suchoň, Alexander Moises and Jan Zicker. The theoretical and ideological scope of their creative route was not designed by the half-educated Novacek, but by Josef Kresárnek, an intellectual and composer himself. In his interpretation of Suchoň, he formulated a concept of a single right route for Slovak music as a junction of modernity with elements from archaic layers of Slovak folk music. The second point of Kresárnek's concept sounds more socialistic. It is a demand for comprehensibility, or as he formulates it, responsibility of the composers toward the national audience. In fact, both ideas smoothly follow Czech-influenced interwar thinking about the best way to develop Slovak music and its specific tasks. The story of Slovak national modernism continued relatively smoothly through several political epochs. In the interwar period, the young Slovak composer studied in Prague, which then had an extremely European, by which I mean more open, character. However, their teacher was a conservative modernist, Vyacheslav Novák. Returning to Slovakia in the 40s, these still young men found a wide range of working opportunities. They were advised by domestic publicists to avoid cosmopolitan experimentation and to build Slovak music. Then the wartime Slovak state originated, which was far less totalitarian for young Bratislava intellectuals and artists than for the Jews sent to concentration camps. After the war, there were a time of great expectations. On the other hand, these were heavy years for Novacek and the likes of him. But on the other hand, the regime enabled Moises und Suchon to carry out an extensive project of enlarging the institutional basis for musical life in Slovakia, and thus enabled them to realize their own potential. It did not demand great self-denial or any betrayal of their artistic ideals, and they became the officially sanctioned exponents of socialist music. Already before the war, they had finished their youthful flirtation with Neue Sachlichkeit, Moises, as well as with Schönberg, Suchon, preceding Zhdanov's command from 1948 for all socialist artists to get rid of borrowed rooms. Suchon's opera, The Whirlpool, originated according to the interwar, rather up-to-date literary model during the clerical Slovak state, yet it was finished and produced in a country already belonging to Stalin's empire. Following certain adaptations, which will be specified by Marketa Štefková tomorrow, it served as a model for work of socialist realism and an export article. Today we can only smile at the fact that the path from fascist Ludenboden nationalism to communist nationalism indeed wasn't very long. Nevertheless, this nationalist work is astonishingly quite good, aesthetically speaking, and the theme which forms the basis of the subject is a national myth rather than national ideology. The Slovak myth, the creation of which was crucially helped by a figure of the national revival in the 19th century, Ludovic Štúr, and later developed by the communist writer Vladimir Mináč, is mostly the myth of a common people. We think of ourselves as a nation lacking any kings, a plebeian nation, minced, according to Mináč, in manorial Hungarian, German, and Slavic mills. The theme of sufferance, both national and social, is very strong. These are the cardinal aspects of the Slovak myth, which appears in the 19th and 20th century Slovak art in many forms. Regarding its reception in music, it was best developed by Eugen Suchon in his orchestral balladic suite from 1935 and orchestral cantata Sound of the Subcarpathian Land, 1938. Suchon's music was acclaimed by the national public as a national music, so it is wonderful that Anna Dalos has included his picture in our program, even hosting him in the center. The center is a very important category in the Herderian philosophy. So, in the sound of the Subcarpathian lands, the Slovak myth is applied in an interesting updated variant, typical for interwar Slovak art. This variant accentuates the lingering poverty of a people, which even intensified during the economic crisis. As Jaroslav Zatloukal's lyrics of the composition say, quote, "The land, that sentimental beauty with crown of thorns circling the outlaw's forehead. This is the very land shaded by poverty and mountains, where the sower of grief rambles through the highlands," end quote. The sound displays an interesting concept of modality rooted in folk music, a mixture of Lydian and Oxolydian scales with augmented fourth and minor seventh. But Suchon's music possesses also unquestionably late romantic traits. Peter Zagar, in his recent analysis, compared its rhapsodic character and music tectonics with Liszt's and Tchaikovsky's works. It would be interesting to know Kresanek's opinion, as he so ardently accentuated Suchon's synthesis of ancient folk tradition layers with modernity, and never mentioned that Suchon's creation would owe anything to 19th century music in any way. My first and only music example, and you have the end now.
When, helped by Universal Edition, his balladic suite
as well as other compositions were played by philharmonics in Dresden, Berlin and Vienna. I'm not going to comment upon the rather unhappy context of Slovak-German cultural relations in the period. In the 60s, Jan Zicker's operas toured important German opera stages. Until now, these remain the biggest international accomplishments of Slovak music. The reason may dwell partly, but not exclusively, in the folkloric and nationalistic orientation of a considerable part of Slovak music until the turn of the 60s. In the middle of the 20th century, the folk lied in our region was still perceived as a positive value in Herder's sense. The premieres of two great Slovak modernist national operas for the paradoxical expression, Suchon's the Whirlpool, 1949, and Zicker's Juro Janosik, 1953, were described by the eyewitnesses as a genuine frenetic successes and not as politically directed representative events. If it was perhaps only in the 70s when folkloric creation, which in the meantime has acquired a stabilized and academically polished appearance, became a repulsive ornament of a hated regime for a certain part of the population. In the West, however, the positive aspect assigned to the Volkslied by Herder had long before, at least since the end of the Second World War, been replaced by a negative aspect. Folklorism in music that then corresponded with the demarcation lines of the Cold War. Such a marginal position of a particular music culture influences also the methodology used by music historians in the given culture in an interesting way. Briefly, they are pushed into defense and forced to cultivate a local perspective. If we are not present in the international value system, then they seem to think, let us build and approve our own system, an independent one. Years ago, when I was a beginner, an ardent interpreter and apologist for Slovak music and opera, I found this tendency of Slovak historians regrettable, as art, after all, is not primarily only a national phenomenon, but universally human. And then it helped me much when I read in Karl Dahlhaus about the concept he named Werkgeschichte, the history of works. According to Dahlhaus, Werkgeschichte works as an alternative to Adorno's method of music historiography. The letters, topics, are formulated by the history itself, the Geschichte selbst, so that aesthetic judgments result from historical judgments, that is, from hypotheses about what is up to date in a given period. End quote. Contrary to this, the method of Werkgeschichte comes from the aesthetic judgment about a particular work, from a conviction about its artistic quality, and only subsequently it leads to historical judgments. This encouraged me then to concentrate on one particular work, Zicker's opera Resurrection, in which, according to my aesthetic judgment, the author succeeded to create a masterpiece. And I tried to document not only the composer's path to this excellent work, but also its quality and uniqueness, and thus also its relevance in the history of music and opera, and not only Slovak music and opera. This method of starting from a singular work is indeed especially appropriate for the historical explication of music, which is consigned to a national